What's happening?
What the hell?
Is it plugged in?
Yes. Oh, that's not good. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. What the hell?
Linoleum knife.
Oh, God. Did that tape break?
I don't know. Oh, it did.
Oh,
it's the tape.
Oh, oh. You can't see this at home, but it is literally, like, unspooled.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh.
Well, you've got the files.
Yeah, well, I'll make a new one. Oh, sorry, Blue. Oh, gosh. It's weird. I have cassettes from the...
A podcast of the cinema.
I have cassettes from the 80s that are in great shape, and this one is months old.
Yeah.
Wow. Everything falls apart.
That was pretty good.
That was creepy. That was like the Halloween episode. The minor key version of our theme song. Ew. Anyway, hi. Welcome to Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
I just said that.
I know. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor of The Wrap and film critic for What the Flick.
You're also the film critic for The Wrap and What the Flick.
Yes, and you're Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
I'm just repeating you. I
get it. It's so
there.
Clever. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, subtle, but I got it. Put that cookie down.
I'm not eating it on the mic.
You
I'm
are not eating.
No, I'm not eating it on the microphone.
All right. Well, you're breaking it up like you're going to be putting, like it's going to be going mouth word.
There might be little morsels that I sneak into my
mouth. I don't think so.
When I'm away from the microphone.
I don't think. When are you away from the microphone? This is a two-hander. We have no guests this week like last time.
But it's gingerbread.
It'll still be gingerbread when we're done talking.
We have so many. We have one of our friends brought 1,000 gingerbread men cookies to our Christmas Eve dinner, and
we are still here.
We still are eating them. I mean, they're not as soft as they were on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
They're in a Ziploc bag, a very effective product.
They're not sponsors, so we're not going to. Don't help.
They're in a Ziploc bag, and I just wasn't about to throw them away because they're gingerbread cookies. And I just thought.
You have them with tea, so it doesn't matter if they're soft or not.
I know. It's so great.
So, and when the show's over, you can have all you want.
Well, I just had one.
But we're not.
But now I've got this other one.
We're not going to have it while we're recording a podcast.
I promise it will not be eaten near the microphone. Maybe while you're talking about something for a long time, maybe I'll put one bite in my mouth and have a sip of tea. No one's gonna know.
Why can't you be a professional?
No one's gonna know.
Why can't you live up to the level of expertise and quality that our tens of listeners have come to expect at this point?
But I am, though. I'm doing that right
Sadly,
now.
Sadly, you're right.
You
yes.
see me doing that right now. I'm living up to it. By not putting that cookie into my mouth as I speak into this microphone.
Okay. You're really popping your peas, by the way. You might...
Should I
move back? A little bit, yes. That would...
Should you turn me down, maybe?
Well, that's... If you're popping your peas, it doesn't matter. It's you're too close.
I mean, I'm a pea papa.
They call you pea papa.
I'm just moving back then.
Okay.
A little bit. The
I'm a little logy today. I'm gonna just put that out there because I went on an 8 mile hike this morning.
A pre podcast excuse,
basically. Yeah, it's an apologia for what will follow in case I sort of drift out of consciousness because I'm exhausted.
Here's what's gonna be great: you're gonna fall asleep
and you're gonna eat,
and I'm gonna eat a cookie.
That's great.
That's gonna be how the show ends.
Quality podcasting. I know. I got invited to go on a group venture to hike up to just behind the Hollywood sign. You can't go
gay nature walk.
You
is
can't
what you got invited.
You
on.
Can't go to the Hollywood sign like people tend to jump
and
off
to hurl yourself
things.
From the H.
Exactly, because your dreams did not come true here.
Down to the rocks below.
But you can go right behind it, and I've never done that. And I was thinking that we have lived here for 15 years now.
Peg Entwistle.
Yes.
And look her up.
And there are all
She's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I'm sure she is. There's all these L.A. things that I never, ever do, despite having lived here forever. And so I'm kind of trying to mentally sort of make a list and do them, and this was one of them. So I can scratch it off. I've now been near the Hollywood sign.
You know what? I don't need to go near it.
I didn't make you.
First of all, I can see it just fine from the roof. of conveyor belt Ralphs.
Well, yes, at a long, long distance.
There are many different Ralphs supermarkets in Los Angeles that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I like conveyor belt Ralphs,
yes,
which is the one at
Fountain and La Brea.
Fountain and La Brea. You park on the roof, and you take a conveyor belt down to the ground.
Right.
And then you ride this big diagonal conveyor. It's not an escalator. It's this big diagonal sort of
flat belt. It's like a moving sidewalk at an incline.
Yeah. And
oh, my God.
You hang on to the sides.
Anything else you want to do with that microphone? Like flush it down the toilet, perhaps? Now that you're done popping peas and punching it?
I popped my peas. I punched it.
You want to kick it around the block?
The cookie is on its way. I'm going to chew that cookie.
You want to take it down to Chinatown and show it how to kick the gong around? Sheesh.
What is that?
It's from Minnie the Moocher. Okay. He took her down to Chinatown and showed her how to kick the gong around. Hidey, 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 hi.
Really?
Do you not know this?
I don't know the words to that song.
Do you know the song?
I know the song.
Okay, that's a start.
Sounds racist.
It's not.
It sounds racist.
It is not. Oh, brother.
So, what was I saying that was very important?
Ralph's.
I was talking about Ralph's.
Ralph's.
There's Rock and Roll Ralph's.
Right.
Which does not live up to its name.
No.
Just because it's near the Guitar Center.
I've
been in that Ralph's, okay, and I've seen some of the rocking people. They never seem all that happy. If you're rocking, you should be happier than that.
You know, look, this is more of the brooding rocker Ralph's. It's not this is not the S Club 7 Ralph's.
I need to see happy, excited rockers.
These are deep
singing "L.A. Dele" while I'm in that Ralph's.
These are deep pondering, would-be Jim Morrison type rockers.
No. And then I like Logan's Ralph's, which is on Ventura Boulevard in the Valley.
Not to be confused with the new Giganto Ralph's on Ventura Boulevard, which we still haven't been to.
We haven't been to the new Giant Ralph's.
That's like a full day trip.
I like Logan's Ralph's because it was built in the 70s and it looks like they shot Logan's Run.
Yeah, it's the Space Station 76 of grocery stores.
Why are we talking about Ralph's?
You can see the Hollywood sign
from the roof of Conveyor Belt Ralph's.
Yes, you can.
And I see it, and I look at it, and I go, oh, yeah, I live here where that sign is. Because that's always the thing. It's like, oh, look, that's the sign. That means you live here in that place where the sign is.
Right. It's like looking at the Empire State Building in New York.
So, except the Empire State Building is a marvel of modern architecture. And the Hollywood sign is a billboard for a real estate development.
Well, it originally was, but now it's been restored, and it's a
landmark.
It's a globally recognized landmark.
That is true.
It is our Taj Mahal.
It is. You're just making me sadder and sadder.
You open up your eyes, and you saw the sign. So there you go. Is that a music reference you get? If I can't do Cab Calloway?
Yes, I get that one, because I'm as metal as a tennis bracelet.
That's true.
So it's just us this week.
It is just us.
No guests.
We had a packed house last time.
We had such a packed house that I barely spoke last week.
That's
true. I'm very polite.
So if you
like to let the guests talk, especially if we've got two or three and they're talking amongst themselves, they're the entertainment. People can hear me any old time. I like letting the guests talk.
I mostly direct traffic.
I especially like letting Manola talk because she makes people angry.
Yes.
As we're about to learn when we read the letters.
Yes. I adore Manola, even though we super disagree on quite a few things, most notably lately, Black Hat, her review of Which Ran This Weekend. But I do want to call her out on one thing. When she defended American Sniper and I said that she was a Clint Eastwood fan, she immediately demurred and said, no, sometimes yes and sometimes no. And I even brought up Jersey Boys and she said that she hadn't reviewed it. And she has.
No.
Yes.
She didn't say she didn't review it.
I thought she said that.
No.
Okay, well maybe I got that
because
wrong.
Obviously you saw there's a written review
by her. Yes, she did. Yes. All right, then never mind. I take it all back. But
trying to call her out when she's not even here.
You know, just bringing it up. Anyway.
What kind of behind the back calling out are you?
I would tell her all this to her face if she were here.
That's true.
Anyway, but love. I love Manola. I love Robert. I love Peter. It was great to have them all here. If you missed last week's episode for whatever reason, where we talked about the best of 2014 with the film critics of the New York Times, the LA Times, and Variety, go back and listen to it. It's a good one.
Especially if you hate me.
Yes, because there's very little.
I don't talk very much.
Yeah. But now it's just us.
If you hate. Why are you listening if you hate me?
Maybe to see when I win.
Like that one lady.
Over your domineering.
That one lady that was like, I'm never listening to this show again. I can't listen to that guy talk.
Wasn't that somebody's mother?
No.
It was an actual listener?
It was an actual listener who was like, I can't understand anything he's saying. He just sounds like he's growling the whole time.
Yes.
Like Paddington. What do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about Paddington or do we want to talk about Black Hat?
Let's get Black Hat out of the way.
Begin. I'm going to eat this gingerbread man head. Right. Tell people what happens during Black Hat.
I'm going to take your mic down all the way. I've always wanted to do this to you during a show, and now I'm doing it. You are potted down all the way, so eat away. Okay, so Black Hat. It's the new film from Michael Mann. And apparently, if you are somebody who really likes Michael Mann, that means that everything he does is great, and every decision he makes is awesome and artistic and brilliant, even when I think it's garbage. That's been my takeaway from this weekend, because... Okay, fine. We disagree about movies all the time, and people have different aesthetics and different, you know, things they want to get out of the motion picture experience, and I totally get that, and I totally respect that. But I have felt like I'm in the weirdest, like, Twilight Zone when it comes to Michael Mann, because the reviews of this movie aren't just, oh my god, it's brilliant, but they specifically point out facets of the film that I think are disastrous and praise them as... assets. So I don't know what to make of it, but here's my take on this thing. Okay, so it stars Chris Hemsworth as the world's greatest computer hacker, which is already kind of pushing it. I mean, find me one computer hacker on Earth who looks half as Chris Hemsworth as Chris Hemsworth does, and then we'll talk. So he is in jail for cyber crimes, and after some hacker takes down a Chinese nuclear reactor and gets into the American commodities market using code that resembles an oldie but goodie of Hemsworth's, he gets sprung from the joint to help out his old MIT college roommate, who's now a higher up in the Chinese army, trying to track down the bad hacker, the Black Hat. Or is the Black Hat code? I don't even remember now what the Black Hat is. Hemsworth does wear a black hat at the end of the movie so that he can, you know, zip through an Asian airport without being noticed because, of course, you know, the place is just lousy with 6'6" blonde Australians, but that's another topic. So they get him out of jail and...
I'm almost done!
Okay, and he immediately falls in love with the sister of the college roommate who's also, like, a computer genius, but... This thing goes from zero to zero in no time at all. Like, suddenly, we're just told that they are madly in love, they're all over each other, you know, the brother is concerned about what's going to happen when the two of them have to part ways because she's clearly crazy about him, although neither of them register a single emotion in their face. They have no chemistry together. There's no any kind of basis for this love story. And there we go. You're back.
I'm back.
So that's garbage. Then you've got this.
My chewing was so loud you could hear me on your microphone.
I hope not. Then you've got pretty much a passel of terrible performances, with the notable exception of Viola Davis, who pretty much can take anything and firemen's carry it to some degree of safety. So she brings the movie alive in those moments that she's on screen. So it gets to the point where you get excited when she appears in a scene, because you know there's going to be one thing in it that isn't going to suck. Then the other thing, and this is where Dave and I disagree, is the Michael Mann's whole thing with digital cinematography in the last few years has been to sort of embrace the cheesy digitalness of it to the extent where you almost expect pixels to be visible on screen, because every time there's a visible light source on camera, it suddenly looks all fried and freaky looking. Like if you saw Public Enemies, every time there was a headlight on screen, suddenly it looked like you were watching an episode of Unsolved Mysteries or something.
Fried and freaky is one of my favorite looks.
Well, it's distracting and ugly, and the fact that in the closing sequence he decides to frame it amidst an Indonesian street festival where hundreds of people are carrying torches, this movie just drove me up the wall. It's boring, it's badly written, it's terribly acted, it's visually incompetent and pointless. But if you think Michael Mann is the bee's knees, it's a work of genius.
Shall I?
Have at it.
I can't really hear myself. Can you hear me?
Turn up your headphones, sweetie.
Sweetie.
Yeah.
You just called me sweetie. Right.
That better? You're number two.
I'm number two. Oh, there I am. Okay.
Better?
Sweetie.
Shut up.
If you're listening to this show for the first time, we're married. Hence that.
To each other.
Hence that thing that you just heard him out of his mouth. Sweetie. I am a sweetie.
You just let it go.
I really am. And
people would not have picked up on that if you were not like pounding it with a mallet right now.
I am totally a sweetie.
Oy.
All right. This movie.
Yes.
My review has not yet posted on the site.
Oh, well.
Well, you know. But here's what I said.
If you were reading this review, it would be the following.
In the forthcoming few days, it should probably appear on the site. Movies.com. Movies.com is my employer.
And sometimes they even post
sometimes
your writing.
Sometimes they post my reviews. And I'm a huge fan of Michael Mann.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a voluntary hostage. I think of Michael Mann and directors, other directors that I like, the way I think of my favorite bands.
Mm-hmm.
Bands that I'm so in the tank for.
That when they do their experimental jazz Fantasia record, you're still on board?
Yeah.
Gotcha. I don't have a director like that. Even, like, Almodovar, I could point to one or two movies of his that I'm sort of, eh. You know, Todd Haynes, anybody who I'm a big fan of, I they don't ever get 100% pass for me, so I don't get this.
That's the way it is to live with you, as well.
You get 100% pass for me, no matter how exasperating
I find
it.
That's not true. That is actually not a fact. So, this movie looks amazing. I am into that fried and freaky, cold, fluorescent, digital thing.
Even when it looks like the telenovela setting on your high-def TV?
Yes.
Like at the end when they're doing the first aid in the van?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we're not on the same page here.
That's not ineptitude. That's a preference. That is his choice. That's a decision.
Even if it's intentional, it's hideous.
Well, you can say it's hideous to your eyes, but mm-hmm. I'm saying he meant to do that.
Oh, no, I'm sure he did. I'm sure that he's persnickety
and
enough.
He's got his reasons.
Things don't just happen, but they're dumb reasons.
And I really think that chill is sort of evocative of the horribleness of computers in the world. To put it, you know.
Oh, that's why all the performances are emotionless, because computers?
I don't know. The charitable side of me, the charitable side that says, go Michael Mann, be awesome all the time, says, yes. I want to think that these are controlled performances, the way that, say, you know, how deadpan everybody was in Cronenberg's Crash.
Wow.
I want to say that.
That's a stretch.
But I won't say that.
Okay, good.
I won't say that because I don't know that it's true.
Hmm.
I want to believe.
Mulder.
But let's say that I'm just going to, for the benefit of the doubt, let's just say these are intentionally controlled, emotionless performances.
Then Viola Davis is giving the bad one.
Then Viola Davis is giving the bad one, exactly. And the words that they say the things in this script that they say about the virtual this, the ones and the zeros and the, I'm like, who talks that way? It's not the 90s. Now,
the
like,
net.
I was just, like, I kept
my
waiting
cousin's
for
really
someone,
into the net.
I kept waiting for someone to say cyber blah blah. Like, it was, yeah, my cousins. Do you have those URLs? Oh, yeah, where'd you get all those URLs? My cousin, he's really into the net.
It's a Degrassi line we like to quote a lot.
This is what one was of 90210.
No, it was Degrassi.
Okay.
This is one of those movies where they decide to take you inside the computer, and so
I love that stuff.
You see data
my
running through a microchip,
stuff
like
is
something
the non-human stuff.
But even that,
the most beautiful, weird Tronscape.
But it was
stuff
it was so
was
like part Tron and part opening credits of Fight Club, which so many people
it.
Have done now. The whole like, let's go into the nervous system, let's go inside a computer. The rock bottom nadir of which is, let's show somebody typing on a keyboard
from under the keyboard. Yeah, I'm
let's,
down for that too.
Let's show a flash stuff. Drive being inserted into a computer from inside the computer.
I
like
it.
Oh, come on.
That was the stuff I liked.
Blah.
When the people opened their mouths, then I stopped liking it. And I just wish... Here's the thing. Number one, I wish it had been silent. Number two, I think I may have to see it again.
Yeah, have fun.
Because enough people whose opinions I really respect have come out all guns blazing in favor of it, that I am willing, and this is, you and I have had this discussion this week already, and it's not something you didn't know about me. You're the only person I like to argue with about movies. I like to argue with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to argue with you.
Thank you.
I don't like arguing about movies with anyone else. That is why, at screenings, I usually bring a book to read before the screening so that I don't have to talk to people. And these people are all my friends. These are people I like. But invariably, the film critic conversation before a screening is, so, what have you seen? What have you liked? And then you sit there for the next 20 minutes doing your job. Which is not... I'll start doing my job when the movie begins.
Right.
Until that point, you and I are going to talk about steaks, or, you know, the quality of the air today. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. I just don't want to talk about movies. Because I don't want to know what your opinion is about anything, because I don't care. And if you want to have a fight with me about a movie, I don't care about doing that either. You're not changing my ideas. You're not going to convince me of anything.
Right.
I'm not going to convince you of anything. Someone's going to say something mean. Eventually.
It's just going to get ugly.
It's going to get ugly, yeah. Why can't we all just be nice and be friends?
Talk about steaks.
Talk about steaks. Or the best vegan steak that you have tasted lately. I'm not into rehashing the work that I just did for the past three days.
Hear you.
So when I sit down to read other critics' reviews, that is when I want to know. And if the consensus among the people whose reviews I respect,
mm-hmm.
if their consensus is, well, this is fantastic, and I walked out of it thinking, no. That makes me think I need to go see that movie again. Not because I want to have my opinion changed. I just want to see it the way they saw it.
Right.
I want to go back and look. Maybe there was something I missed. You know, maybe I didn't see the stuff that I should have seen. Maybe I was looking in the wrong part of the frame.
I have at some points in my...
I'm willing to be shown why someone disagrees with
sure.
me. But it's got to be on my own time.
I have at certain points gone back and looked at another movie after reading reviews that had a totally different take than I did. And it didn't necessarily change my mind, but at least I could sort of figure out what they were looking at and, you know, what they were saying. Or even just to think about a movie in different terms.
For example, every time that you disagree with me, and then you go back and you look at something, and then you walk home, you walk away from it, and you say, oh, Dave White
was right. That's never happened, actually, but that's fascinating that you think so. So people who've been on this show, Manola Dargis, Matt Zoller-Seitz, big fans of Michael Mann, big fans of Black Hat, had lots of nice, you know, interesting things to say about it, and I read them both, and I just was like, I couldn't make the mental leap involved to go where they were going. Like, there's some movies where I'm like, okay, well, sure, I don't personally respond to XYZ, but I see where you're seeing this, or, oh, okay, that's a take on it that I hadn't really thought of, and yeah, that does sort of change what I think about that character. I read those reviews, which is like, oh, wow, what? And it's not like I'm right and they're wrong. I truly can't even wrap my head around what they saw in that movie and what their takeaway was, because it was just not what mine was. So you know, we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Love you guys. Not that you're listening.
Paddington. Paddington is a widow bear. He's a widow bear. He's from
Darkest Peru. He likes marmalade.
He didn't know he liked marmalade until the Englishman came.
Well, he never actually met the Englishman. The Englishman met his aunt and uncle.
That is, yes. And he met Paddington's aunt and uncle, voiced by Michael Gambon.
And Imelda Staunton.
Imelda Staunton.
You can't think too much about the chronology of this movie.
No.
The British explorer is presented clearly as somebody who arrived in the 30s.
Yeah.
And now it's the modern day, and he has a daughter, and it's,
you don't think about that stuff.
No, doesn't matter.
He taught the bears to enjoy tea and marmalade on toast.
Yes.
Those are both fine things to enjoy.
Those are some of the only few good things that British colonization brought anyone.
The minute they started talking about marmalade, my first thought was, oh, we're out of marmalade at home. Like, I do enjoy having some orange marmalade in the house at most times. If I'm out of it for a very long time, I think, oh, I need to get some of that at the store, because I like that on toast with my tea. I'd like some right now, actually.
You already had two gingerbread cookies.
I know, but now I want toast and marmalade and another cup of tea. I won't do that, though.
No.
This is a professional podcast of the cinema.
Stop stuffing your face.
No time for interruptions.
We're trying to talk about movies.
So, a professional podcast.
Talking about Paddington.
So the explorer goes home. He leaves the bears. The bears become British. Then an earthquake happens. And in the aftermath of the earthquake, the very sad aftermath of the earthquake, the ant bear, she goes to live in a home for retired bears. And she sends Paddington on a boat to England, to London.
Yes. With the explorer's hat and a tag around his neck.
It says, please look after this bear.
Thank you.
And she assumes that someone will just...
Well, the explorer
adopt him on
site. The explorer had told the aunt and uncle that if you ever come to England, London, you will have a great reception.
Yeah.
So she sends Paddington along. He winds, he's not named Paddington yet. So she sends him along. He winds up at Paddington Station, sort of lost and abandoned, until he is taken in by the Brown family.
Yes.
Headed by Hugh Bonneville and Sally Hawkins.
And here's how you know what kind of film you're seeing. He's sitting in the station under this flickering
neon light,
lost and found kiosk sign. And the word lost is lit up, but the word found keeps flickering in and out and flickers out. And then when the Browns come up to him to take him, the light found goes back on.
Mm-hmm.
That is the first time you may start weeping. You may find yourself weeping as several other occasions during this lovely, charming, sweet, good-hearted film.
It's funny that we were just talking about The Blitz a couple weeks ago with Women in Black 2, because I'd never really made the connection before that Paddington has a tag around his neck.
Yeah.
You know, please look after this bear. That's exactly like the Blitz babies, right, with their little tags. And then later on, you meet a character in the film, an antiques dealer played by Jim Broadbent, who obviously
was himself one of those one of the Kinder
transport. One of the German refugee Jewish German refugees sent out of Europe and sent to live in it with relations in England and other parts of Europe.
Or strangers,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so for this movie to be able to call both of those things to mind without ever not being sweet and charming and funny, it's like there's a real delicacy to how the movie is portrayed in general. It's written and directed by Paul King, I believe is his name.
From
The Mighty Boosh. He directed all the episodes of The Mighty Boosh and really gets this right. And people don't believe it when I tell them because the American trailers for this movie
heinous.
Are awful.
It's a crime against trailers.
Yeah. They basically take like every single moment.
I hope our friend who cuts trailers is not the person who cut this trailer. Because if he did,
even he would shrug his shoulders and say that's what they wanted. Because they really are trying, they're selling all the sort of comedic mayhem and slapstick. Yeah. And so you think, oh, what are they doing to Paddington? Because the books are so sweet and gentle. The movie is too.
The trailer makes it look like Garfield 2.
Yeah.
A Tale of Two Kitties.
Marmaduke.
Or the Smurfs.
Yeah.
It's all about like, whoa. You know, yeah. And, but the actual film is the opposite.
Yeah.
It's, there are moments of slapstick action. But the movie seems almost less interested in them than we do.
They're sort of, they
like,
happen.
They're like gimmies, yeah. The movie seems much more interested in
the characters.
This family building itself with their new adopted baby bear.
Right.
And there's a villain. And the movie doesn't even take a lot of pleasure in villainizing her. Nicole Kidman plays a taxidermist who's
right.
out to get Paddington for her trophy room. And even when she is being at her, even when she's at her worst and she says, I'm going to stuff you, bear. You're like, no, you're not.
She's very much, if you saw Nicole Kidman in The Golden Compass,
yeah.
She's rocking that same sort of like ice blonde, evil dominatrix.
Extremely tailored outfits, and she looks great. She's funny.
Did you notice at one point she's parodying Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible?
Oh, that's right. I had not made that connection.
I remember thinking, well played movie, well played.
No, I hadn't thought about that. Anyway, look, if you don't have kids, you could go see this movie anyway.
Yeah.
You're going to think it's really nice.
And if you do have kids, oh my God, take them to this.
It is kind of your moral imperative.
Yeah, especially if you took them to like Night at the Museum
or Annie
or something.
If you've taken them to garbage movies, then you better take them to this.
Yeah.
Because in a way, its spirit reminded me of the 2011 Winnie the Pooh. Still popping my peas. I think I need a little
pantyhose.
Yeah, I need something above them.
Maybe.
It reminded me of Winnie the Pooh.
Sure.
In that,
it's gentle, but it's funny.
Yeah. And that didn't make any money.
No.
And so, if you jerks don't go see this movie, you deserve all the garbage movies you get down the road later.
And the problem is that we have to see all those garbage movies, too, so knock it off.
So think of us. If nothing else.
Do us a favor. Go see Paddington.
What else is it? Wedding Ringer?
A Wedding Ringer.
It's funny-ish.
It's funny-ish.
Until it starts hating women.
Yeah. It's a movie that, I had zero expectations. Like, oh, great, a Kevin Hart January comedy. Wonderful. Because I like Kevin Hart. I think he's funny. I think he's talented.
He is.
And I feel like he is very, I think he's saying yes a lot.
Well, yeah.
And I'm sure he's getting offered these kind of crap movies, and he's saying yes, and he's getting paid for them, and the movies are crap.
Isn't that part of the Sony hack?
he was a whore?
don't they talk about that in the Sony hack? He just will do anything, and he just wants money.
I remember that they called him a whore. I forgot why.
But, I think it's great. Like,
get it when you can get it.
Get that money.
Yeah, not going to blame you for
that. However,
this is not.
You say yes to too much garbage,
people stop wanting to go.
And then, you
people hold them against you.
The brand that you have built
yeah.
Becomes less attractive.
It collapses under the weight of a lot of crappy movies.
And here's the other weird thing, is that, like, the movies he made last year that were pretty good, like About Last Night, I don't think anybody saw that.
No, everybody went to see Ride Along, which was terrible.
Yeah.
And this one is not, I mean, it's terrible-ish. I don't know. I did laugh quite a bit, and it does have one of the most interesting reversals I've seen in a movie in terms of making me think, ugh, this is so homophobic to you. Oh, I see what you're doing there.
Let's not give that away.
No, I'm not. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Unless you, I mean, you know, I don't know who's going to see this film, but
just in case, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But I, you know, so I'll give it points for that. Anytime a movie can kind of catch me flat-footed and go and realize that I was underestimating it and fool me, that's okay. Like, points to you, movie.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen a lot. But
there's enough funny stuff in the film to almost distract you from its general mediocrity.
Yeah, it's kind of a shambles, and it does eventually get really kind of ugly about the female characters.
Ladies.
after having pretty much ignored them for the whole movie,
Then
they make one of them just like out of nowhere awful at the end, which just felt like bad writing.
Right.
But the basic premise is that Kevin Hart is a professional best man, because apparently there are tons of straight guys, and gay guys even, in the world who manage to get somebody to marry them despite the fact that they have no friends in the world, and their spouses-to-be don't seem to notice that suddenly this guy shows up and is like the best pal and does, you know, is the best man and gives a lovely toast and then is never heard from again.
Right.
Because his deal with the grooms is like, you pay me.
How do you explain that in the context of your marriage?
Yeah, what happened tonight? Your best friend.
You went for it, did he die?
Does he keep faking deaths? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's basically, somebody described it, it's like Pretty Woman. You know, you pay me, I do the thing, and then I go away, we're not friends.
Right. No kissing.
Yeah. And so apparently it's the I love you man thing of like, grooms have no friends and can't get anybody to be their best men, so this guy steps in. So he's now stepping in for Josh Gad, who is playing. They never speak this out loud, but it's such a Shiksa goddess thing where she's blonde and waspy, and he's like, you know, when they say his name during the wedding, like all of his middle names are like Menachem and, you know,
right, yeah,
Shmuel or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's getting married, and you know, the wedding's in 10 days, and she's got 7 bridesmaids, and he's got nobody. So he hires Kevin Hart, who, given that he has to, like, find 7 groomsmen, and he has to go to all these family things, and da-da-da, he refers to it as the never-before-done Golden Tux package.
Yeah.
So, you know, just getting all that together and rounding up these 7 weird randos to be the thing, and Jennifer Lewis plays plays Kevin Hart's assistant, and there's never enough Jennifer Lewis in movies for my money.
Yeah.
And, you know, things kind of amble along, and there's nutty hijinks involving, like, bachelor parties and, you know, police chases and animal, you know,
people getting thrown in the mud.
Yeah.
Lots of screaming, people being set on fire.
Oh, yeah, people being set on fire, of course. So, you know,
that stuff's funny.
That's
the stuff that makes me laugh
through
the whole movie.
Some of it is
the outrageous craziness.
Some of it's funny.
That's the funny stuff.
Some of it's funny, some of it's kind of eye-rolling, and then it just sort of, like, falls apart. There is I made it a point not to mention this in my review, but it's in every single trailer, so it's not a big deal to give away the fact that there's a dance sequence in the middle of the movie.
Yes.
That is terrific.
Right.
that made me forgive this movie a great deal of its sins up to that point, because it's so funny and well done, and I love an out of nowhere musical number. Why not?
Yeah.
But yeah, ultimately this is just kind of and that's spelled
agree to everything you said. It's funny enough when it's funny.
Yeah.
You must not think about any of it, or it all falls apart and becomes ugly. There's a core of misogyny and cold sadness in the middle of it that
doesn't want you to contemplate.
Do not confront it.
You know, when it's on cable in 7 or 8 months,
yeah,
you know, half watch it and half laugh. You know, I don't know. Also opening this weekend, a limited release, but also on demand. So if you are in the U.S., you can get this movie wherever you are on Amazon or, you know, iTunes or any of those usual places, is a film called Appropriate Behavior. It is the writing directorial debut and of Desiree Akhvan, who also stars in the film. She is on this season of Girls. I think she actually premieres on tonight's episode. We're taping this on January 18th. 2015. And this is I think the movie that kind of might have been her calling card that got her hired. I don't know what the chain of events there was.
Yeah.
But it was the U.S. centerpiece film at Outfest last summer, and it's kind of a bisexual Iranian American Annie Hall. Is that this? Shoot. At the beginning of the movie, the
I want to say it's more like a bisexual Persian Frances Ha.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. you know, at the beginning of the film, she breaks up with her girlfriend and sort of has these flashbacks throughout the film about their relationship. And there's a great moment. They have a great meet-cute on New Year's where they're sitting on a stoop outside of a party, and Maxine, the girl, is complaining about a lot of things, and the lead character says, "Your anger is really turning me on. I hate a lot of things, too." It's a very low-key movie, and
I like its low-keyness.
Yeah.
I really sort of dug how nothing happened.
Yeah, I mean, the arc of the film is that basically she finally, you know, deals with her family, who doesn't know. But that's not even really what it's about.
No, it's not.
You know, that's kind of putting too fine a point on it.
It meanders along.
Yeah,
it's like four episodes of looking in a row.
It's very observational.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of kind of small, funny moments. She sort of lies her way into getting this gig teaching film, but the students aren't quite what she expects, and then the movie that they make is not exactly what's expected either. And it's very charming. I want to see. It's the kind of debut film where you want to see what else this filmmaker has in her paint box, because I think she's on a. It's a good start.
It's not especially good looking. It doesn't, you know, have a lot going on.
Yeah. It's made on the cheap.
Visually.
Dave kept pointing out the fact that during the New Year's sequence that you couldn't see anybody's breath, and they weren't wearing heavy coats or anything.
Like, I'm sorry, is this New Year's Eve in Florida? Where are they? Brooklyn.
Brooklyn
in June is when they're shooting us. No, it's fine. It's funny enough. It's promising.
Yeah.
I can't say that I thought it was great. Because I didn't feel it was entirely, you know, forgive this word, maybe cinematic. But she's funny.
Yeah, she's funny, and I liked how it felt very specific, you know. The stuff with the family, the stuff with the Brooklyn art types, and, you know, Scott Adsit from 30 Rock has a funny sort of recurring role as a not particularly good parent.
Her mom is played by Anne Dung, who's a painter. She's an artist. She's an actress sometimes. She's been a model. She's done a whole lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
She's an artist, and that surprised me. Part of me thinks that's where the girl's connection happens.
Oh, maybe.
You know, because Lena Dunham's parents are...
Right. I'm sure they're
artists, and
I'm sure they're
somehow someone knew someone. You know what I mean? Like, there's some behind-the-scenes connectivity going on there.
Well, I'm sure Desiree has talked about this in interviews. I met her at Outfest last summer, which is why I'm using her first name.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't grill her about it. But, you know, the movie premiered at Sundance last year, so, I mean, uh-huh. it's been a pretty high-profile thing. And uh-huh. so, you know, it's currently up for a Spirit Award for Best Screenplay.
Yeah.
So there's any number of places where she and Ms. Dunham could have crossed paths. But anyway, so if you see her on Girls and you're like, hey, she's kind of cool, she has made this movie and she's in it, and you can stream it right now, so maybe you should.
We saw Earth Girls Are Easy last night.
Yes.
At Cinefamily. Angeline was there.
Yes.
She's the guardian angel of Los Angeles.
That's true. The patron saint, the director called her.
When you see her, if you happen to see her in Los Angeles, you have good luck for 24 hours.
It's like when a stork builds its nest on your roof.
And the proof is that the minute she drove up in her pink Corvette,
somebody gave our friend Gary Cotty a ticket.
A free ticket.
And he had been in the standby line.
He was in the standby line for the sold-out show, and a total stranger walked up to him and said, "You want this free ticket?" And he said, "Yep." Thanks, Angeline.
Yes.
Good luck bringer to everyone.
Miracle woman.
Yeah.
I had seen this movie.
If you don't know who Angeline is, there's no way to explain her.
She's a star.
She's a very big star.
She's one of the original famous for being famous people.
Yeah.
She was famous for having this series of billboards all over Los Angeles sort of advertising her. And she's, you know, of a voluptuous blonde with a very sort of determined, you know, she has a certain sort of futuristic look. She always wears these sort of robotic sunglasses, and she always drives a pink Corvette. In the 80s she did. And, you know, she was sort of this pop culture phenomenon with a, and ostensibly a musician and actress.
Well, she did. She put out a record.
No, yeah, she in the 80s. She yeah, a
you
couple.
Look at the videos on YouTube.
Yeah,
they're on there,
and she pops up in a few films. Like I was looking at her Wikipedia page last night, but she's mainly well known for the idea of sort of just being a celebrity without necessarily being celebrated for any specific thing.
She's one of the things that makes Los Angeles great.
Yes, it's she couldn't exist in any other city on earth.
There was an interesting thing that happened outside the... We'll get to talking about the movie in a minute.
Yes.
Interesting thing happening outside while we were all waiting online. There is another person in Los Angeles. I'm not even going to say his name.
He's sort
because
of...
Because I don't want to dump on him.
Mm.
He's a guy who drives around in a car.
And he's had several cars over the years.
Yeah. This is a newer model car. Yes. Now. The car is always decorated with his name and photos and his website. And
it's, you know, letting you know that he is available for film and TV work.
Being an actor, yeah. But what he does is he gets out of the car and he starts passing out DVDs to people.
Of his own movies.
His own movies. This person is gross. And... I can't even talk about the things I've seen him do in public.
Let's just say this.
But he's pretty gross.
Angeline is sort of this figure of someone who kind of enjoys being in on this sort of weird corner of fame that she has created for herself.
Yeah.
And this other person is someone who is desperately, desperately trying to create that corner.
Yeah. And he's become well known.
And he's become well known just for the pursuit.
Just for the pursuit, yeah. So what I thought was really interesting, and here's where I was going with this, is that...
He pulled up behind her.
He pulled right up behind her in the car and got out, went to her window, said something to her, and began distributing his work on the sidewalk to the people waiting in line. She did not get out of the car.
Yeah.
And I turned to you and I said, she doesn't have time for him.
No.
Like... She knows she doesn't want...
She's not sharing space.
She doesn't want his weird smell on her. Like, she's a star, and she knows she's a star, and she has created stardom for herself.
Right.
And he just wants to be a star.
Yeah, he radiates desperation, whereas she seems to be very comfortable.
Like, she walks on a cloud...
Exactly.
Of
cotton candy.
Weirdness. And I just thought it was really an interesting moment.
It was an L.A. moment.
Two cult figures as they interact or don't.
Exactly, yeah.
And then we saw Earth Girls Are Easy, which is really great and stupid.
But wonderfully stupid. I had seen it when it first came out because I am a longtime huge fan of Miss Julie Brown. And I remember being really excited about that movie when it came out because I was a big Julie Brown fan, and I was also a fan of Julian Temple's previous film, Absolute Beginners, which was a notorious flop, but I think is it's not with that I had that has aged, you know, well in my own estimation, but I still enjoy watching it. I still think it has some really gorgeous and exciting sequences to it. And what's interesting about watching Earth Girls Are Easy now is it's such a period piece. It is this sort of like idealized dream of not even just specific of South Southern California, but of the Valley specifically, of the San Fernando Valley in the late 80s, and the whole sort of that it became a lifestyle unto itself. You know,
yeah.
It's the flip side of like Moon Unit Zappa in terms of. You know, Mooney and Zap was sort of mocking something, and they're like, yeah! And even if Julie Brown is mocking it, the movie can't help but love it, you know?
Julie Brown still loves it.
Yes, and it's... And she
lives in the valley.
And it's made by, you know, a Brit. So, you know, he's kind of looking at it as sort of the apotheosis of, like, America, a certain kind of Americana, you know? So, yeah, it's a silly, silly movie, but... really fun and really colorful. And
one of our friends was an extra in it, but we couldn't find him anywhere.
He was cut.
Yeah.
He shot for 2 days.
He had floppity hair back in that time.
Yeah, though. There were a lot of floppity hair extras that we thought might be him, and then it turned out not to be
none
him.
None of them were.
But yeah, it's a fun, silly movie. Check out the DVD. You know, it's got some musical numbers with Miss Brown. I had a good time. I'm glad you went. I knew it would be a fun experience.
Yeah.
DVD.
We're done. DVD picks. The Drop comes out this week.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hardy.
Directed by Matthias Schoenaerts.
Yes.
Who did Bullhead?
Bullhead. And I don't know if people went to see this movie or not. I think it just sort of sank like a stone. Am I wrong about that?
I don't think it did great. I don't know if it flopped, but it didn't.
I was really into it.
Big. I was... meh.
Especially into Tom Hardy's performance, which I thought was really nice.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a good year for him.
And it was, you know, moody and sort of a bummer and...
it's one of the last James Gandolfini movies.
Gandolfini movies, yeah.
Although I didn't feel like he got much to do, or at least not much that was different from Tony Soprano. Like it wasn't like seeing him in Enough Said, where it was like, wow, I've never seen this you know, angle on you before.
Well, yeah, it was just a guy, you know, involved in the crime underworld, and mm-hmm. but at a distance, and not wanting to get
further in,
and sort of against his will being brought into it.
Yeah.
And there's this cute little doggy.
Good doggy. It'd be a good double feature with John Wick.
John Wick is an insane kind of.
No, I know.
Not,
I'm kidding.
It's not. Just, it would be if I were going to compare it to anything, you know, tone wise,
mm-hmm.
it would be like A Walk Among the Tombstones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what was that one with? What's the Steve Buscemi movie? That he directed?
Ghost World.
Yes, Ghost World. No, the one he directed that Chloe Sevigny was in.
Trees Lounge?
Trees Lounge.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of Trees Lounge in a way.
I hadn't really thought about Trees Lounge in connection to that. But
well, they're both these sort of seedy working class bars where things are going on. I don't know. It might be a stretch.
I think it is.
Okay, fine.
I think you're completely wrong.
Fine. My DVD pick this week is, Paddington got me thinking about other really great family movies that were, I think, damaged by a misleading and unattractive trailer. So my DVD pick this week is Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium, a greatly underappreciated movie that I think is terrific. It's a wonderful kids' movie about death.
Yeah.
And there aren't enough of those, frankly. Nope. It's delightful. It stars Dustin Hoffman as the titular Mr. Magorium, who has this amazing toy store in New York City where the toys kind of come to life and even the books are sort of alive and it's all happening in there. And he's been alive for centuries and he's ready to move on. And he wants to bequeath it all to Natalie Portman, but she doesn't feel ready to take on the responsibility. She wants him to stay. And he keeps trying to convince her, it's been great, this is my time now.
Yeah.
There's a really charming kid in it whose name escapes me, but he's popped up in other things. He was in Kit Kittredge and some other films.
Right.
Jason Bateman has a very charming performance, and he and the kid and he and Natalie Portman have a very sweet kind of on-screen rapport. Yeah, it's a it, it it's a it made me cry, and it's a cool looking movie. It's directed by the guy who wrote Stranger Than Fiction. Yeah, it's a movie that more people need to see. I really really dug it.
And, of course, you are a crybaby.
I am too. A crybaby. Yeah. Yes, but anyway, so Mr. Rogan's Gordon Emporium, love that movie. It's become kind of a joke. Like it's a joke in Bruno, I remember. But
yes,
you should totally see it. Yeah, exactly. Consider the source.
Bruno wants to be as nice as Mr. Megorium's wonderful.
Letters.
Pulling up a letter. This is from Chad.
Okay.
Dear Dominating Dave and adorable Alonso.
Hey.
I have been a listener to your podcast of the cinema for almost 3 years.
Huh.
I thought I'd pass along some thanks to you for being the most enjoyable part of my daily grind.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was first introduced to Dave's reviews through a friend's recommendation and eventually found my way to the podcast. You both combine a wonderful on-air rapport with a wealth of movie knowledge and a fair sense of criticism. It's true.
No argument here.
It keeps me going throughout my workday as an electrician. That's a cool job.
Mm.
I like that we're your listen at work station. You know, up next, Mike and the Mechanics. Your humor has caused a number of my coworkers to stare at me in confusion as I laugh out loud on the job site.
Oh, yay.
But mostly, I'm grateful for the movies you review and other podcasters, Whitney and Bibbs, that you have highlighted that I might not have been introduced to otherwise.
Oh, great.
I have just started a movie recommendation blog, mostly for my friends, where I review 5 movies at a time and compare them to one another. Movies 5 at a time at Blogspot.
Okay.
So we should link that.
Yes, we'll put that on our page, on our Facebook
page. Maybe you want to be Chad's friend.
Perhaps.
I count you two as great role models.
Oh. Golly.
That's also true. As I get my feet wet in the world of movie blogging, look at me, now I'm gushing. With all that said, and it being the end of the year, I would like to present you with my top 10 favorite movies of the year, as well as my, he spells favorite with an O-U. What country are you from, Chad?
O-U.
Yeah. Canada?
O-U kid. Maybe.
The England? Some other Europe?
They have electricians everywhere, so who knows?
I guess they do. Here's his top 10.
Okay.
Birdman.
Yeah.
Locke.
Yes.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
I was really into that one.
That was a movie that I merely liked and everybody else loved, but I'm fine with it, sure.
Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
The Pretty One. I don't know what that is.
No idea.
This proves that you are from another country, I think. I don't know what The Pretty One is.
No clue.
You get a pass for that
one. Sure.
Chef.
I still never seen it.
It's fine.
Okay.
I liked it. Boyhood.
Yeah.
The Lego Movie.
Okay.
Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Grand Budapest.
Yeah.
You're 100% knife.
Absolutely.
And whatever The Pretty One is.
We're going to look for it.
Yeah.
On your say-so.
This is his all-time top 10. He wants to be twice knifed.
Okay.
In Bruges.
Yeah, good one.
2001.
Sure.
The Lives of Others.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
7.
Mm-hmm. Wait, was that his number 7?
Yeah.
Oh, cute.
Because he wrote, get it? The Intouchables. Is that...
Oh, wait, that's that French one.
The Untouchables?
No, the Intouchables
the
is that...
The Untouchables with Kevin Costner is pretty great.
No, the Intouchables is the schmoopy French one. About
I never saw it.
The paralyzed guy and the nurse.
Yeah, I didn't want to see it because of that.
I didn't see it either. It looked sounded terrible, so...
Yeah.
It sounded like the French version of...
Have you seen it?
No.
All right, can we justifiably mark him off? In terms of knifing, because we just think it's terrible having seen it.
I guess we'll give it to him. But yeah, everything about that movie made it sound like... Was The Visitor, was that movie with Richard Jenkins?
Yeah.
Where he learns how to drum?
Yeah.
It sounded like the French version of that.
Yeah. Number five is every disaster and end of the world movie ever made.
Okay.
I agree.
That's a wide
swath. No, I agree with him about that. Number four, Perks of Being a Wallflower.
All right.
The Sting.
Okay, yeah.
12 Angry Men.
Mm-hmm.
500 Days of Summer.
That's his number one.
Number one is 500 Days of Summer. I really like 500 Days of Summer. I can't tell someone it shouldn't be their favorite movie of all time.
Gosh. I mean, I was okay with it.
Oh, look what he says at the end. Thanks from Canada.
Ah.
If I had only read this through all the way, I would have already known.
Okay,
that
professional.
Canadian. And
I guess we have to go...
Chad Yutke.
I guess we have to go 100% knife, since we have not made ourselves watch The Intouchables. But if we see it and we don't like it, we're going to come circle back around on this one. I'm just going to say that.
Right.
Not that we're ever going to actually watch this movie, but you know, we do.
P.S., he says, in editing this letter, the playback in my head was read by Dave's soothing voice. See, lady who doesn't listen.
Well, she's still not listening.
I'm soothing. You can shut up. Yeah, you're still 100% knife, both lists, even though we have not seen, nor do we want to see, The Untouchables.
Yeah.
All right. From happy to unhappy. This is from David.
Yes. Just read it.
As a veteran attendee of post-movie screening Q&As, this is our friend, David, by the way. This is our actual in-person friend.
Yes, David. And he's a filmmaker.
Yeah. I've noticed a curious trend among audience members after they see a terrible film. In a desperate attempt to fill the awkward silence, an audience member will inevitably say something like, well, it looked amazing, when really what they'd like to say is something more like, what the hell was that? I expect this kind of talking around the real subject from viewers who may not yet be able to articulate their opinions. Not to mention the very human instinct we are all taught as children to not say anything if we can't say something nice. But I expect a lot more from a professional film critic who has had months to form an opinion about a movie, good or bad. Which is why I was so disappointed in the criticism Manola Dargis gave to Obvious Child during your year-end wrap-up last week. Really, Miss Dargis, the most you can say about Obvious Child is, it hurt my eyeballs?
I don't know that this was a roundup where we were necessarily going in deep on everything. I will just give her that.
I find It Hurt My Eyeballs to be succinct and to the point. That's the same thing. Yes. Succinct and to the point is the same thing.
It is, yes.
Succinct and hilarious.
Go on.
I decided to watch the movie with my own eyeballs after hearing her comments. And I agree. Some of the night interior scenes were too dark, but otherwise the movie had an uncluttered and disciplined visual style that did not get in the way of the excellent writing and acting. Believe me, I've seen some truly terrible-looking films in my life, but Obvious Child was not one of them. In fact, some of the scenes were quite lovely. I'm going to skip this whole part where he talks about his Freudian analysis of her.
Yeah, maybe that's... I'm okay with that.
As a final insult, Dargis took the opportunity... I'm sorry, I'm looking at the part where he
just
asks personal questions.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway... As a final insult, Dargis took the opportunity to praise other movies like Goodbye to Language and Listen Up, Philip that feature aggressive visual styles that are often used to dazzle audiences into thinking they're watching great art. Obvious Child was a comedy about abortion by women filmmakers. It was a fresh and original way to talk about a subject that our culture would prefer to look away from. As a gay man, I don't have a lot of personal reasons for watching the film, but I laughed a lot and learned a thing or two about how hard it is for a woman to get an abortion, both logistically and emotionally, especially for a lead character who is a stand-up comic. Obvious Child aimed high, and with the exception of a few poorly lit scenes, it more than rose to the occasion. My hope is that the next film Gillian Robespierre and Jenny Slate make will have a bigger budget and provide them with a better canvas for their art. Maybe then Ms. Dargis won't use bad lighting as an excuse to avoid actually reviewing the film. We're sorry, David. We didn't read one of your paragraphs.
Yes.
Just because
It didn't seem appropriate.
We're not going to read it.
I will say this. I mean, I obviously am a big fan of Obvious Child. I liked it way more than Mignola did. The round table conversation we were having was very loose and unstructured. And, you know, I'm sure if I had tried to corner her more on her opinion about why she didn't like the movie, she would have one. You know, she is not glib about this stuff.
No.
But I think that since we were just kind of giving things in kind of a nutshell, she basically said, it made my eyeballs hurt. And that was enough to keep her from being invested in the movie, and I'll buy that. I don't agree with it, but I buy it. You know, that's a valid thing in the context of the kind of conversation.
Obvious Child is not a good-looking movie.
Not particularly.
But it is really funny.
It's so, yeah. I'm much, you know, in the same way that I can come away from a movie that I think is sort of not well written, but say, wow, it was really shot well, I can totally come away from a movie that wasn't shot well, and if it's well written, that's better for me, because that's a more important takeaway, I think. For me, you know, we all have our own personal aesthetic for this stuff, but I'm fine with a super well written, well acted movie that might look like dumpy, you know.
I really wish that I felt comfortable reading this middle part out loud, because it's cracking me up.
Just let it go. So, all right.
If I read it, your response would be, like, dude.
A little bit. We have not yet recorded.
We dig Mignola Dargis.
We do.
And we dig our friend David.
Yes, they're both great.
In equal measure.
And they have both been invited to Christmas parties past and will be in the future. I'll make sure to introduce you guys if you're ever here at the same time.
That will be... I want to see... Here's what I want. I want one of those, like, cartoon brawls to where it's just a big cloud
with stars and fists and feet.
Fists and feet coming out of it, yeah.
That's not going to happen. These are cool folks. We have not yet recorded our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode of Ballad of Poseidon Adventure.
Don't apologize. We're busy. It's coming.
I didn't apologize. I'm just saying.
I know.
We were hoping to get it done before I leave for Sundance.
And we are.
Okay.
Yes.
You heard it here. That's totally going to happen.
If we don't, then we aren't.
After I get back. So next week should be interesting. I'm going to Sundance. So the plan at this point is that Dave and Whitney will tape the B-Movies podcast, I think with Christy Lemire also, and then Bibbs and I are going to tape Linoleum Knife at Park City.
This is like an Orange County swingers party.
It's kind of...
swapping partners.
I was thinking it was sort of like one of those Different Strokes Facts of Life crossovers, you know, where one cast member...
Orange County swingers
goes, party. Okay, fine. However you want to...
That's right.
Make that work. So that's the plan anyway. We'll see if we actually make it happen, but that's, you know, we'll if it all comes out the way it's supposed to, we'll post links to B Movies podcast on
our page. Me and Whitney and maybe Christy, right. I think also.
Yes. And then Bibbs and I will be in Utah, and we're going to try and tape a show up there and post that as well.
I really want you guys to go to Salt Lake City and find the dudes from My Husband's Not Gay. Could you take a day trip, maybe?
I don't think that's going to be happening, unfortunately.
How far away is it? How far away is Park City from Salt Lake City?
It's a good, like, hour plus drive.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, bummer.
I don't think they'd want to talk to me.
Sure would be cool, though.
I might set off their SSAs. Their same-sex attraction.
You'd be a 5 on the danger scale.
That's right. Oh, look out. Brother, I haven't watched this
Married
yet.
Ladies, I come to take your man.
I have not watched this show yet, but I'm looking forward to
it. Oh, it's amazing.
I hear it's...
We're going to watch it again tonight.
Okay, good.
Well, I'm going to watch it again tonight.
Yes, I'm
going
to watch it for the
first
time.
You're going to watch it for the first time. I wish it were more than just a show, like a one-off. I want it to be a whole series.
Well, as I said,
I've already invested in their lives.
As I said on Twitter,
this is the new Shaw's of Sunset for me. If only it would go to series.
As I said on Twitter, if your marriage qualifies you to be on a show called My Husband's Not Gay, that's a deal breaker, ladies. All right. Anyway, so yeah, so we were hoping to get the Poseidon Adventure one, but in the meantime, feel free to purchase our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes about the Apple or Clue or Josie and the Pussycats or Two for the Road. Those are all available from us for $1.99 each. Just PayPal $1.99 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and include your email address. If you're still feeling like you're missing the holidays, you could even pick up the ones we did for White Christmas or the Mexican Santa Claus. We would like to send you to our friends on the internet. Check out ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. The Popcorn, Rotten Tomatoes Radio.
You don't know where you are.
I don't know. Malton on Movies. The Dennis Anyone podcast with Dennis Hensley. Fat Guys of the Movies. The Criterion Cast. The Brett Easton Ellis podcast. The Schmoes Know. Film Spotting SVU. Podcrash. The Game Night Guys. And Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes. And do leave us a positive review. It helps the whatever weird algorithm they use over there to promote our show on their main page. You can also stream this program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com, and you can leave us a little thumbs up there as well. You can also stream the show on a handy app on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. And while you're at Facebook, you can like that page as well as the Linoleum Knife group page, which is where our listeners go to talk to each other about movies. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel, which where I've been posting old episodes of the show, and I will continue to do so if we can ever find my external hard drive.
It got lost in this apartment somewhere.
I used to have a big, clunky external hard drive that lived on the desk, and now I have this small portable one, and I've lost it.
I portabled it somewhere wrong,
but it's going to turn up anyway. But you can, you know, subscribe to that page anyway.
Or it may never turn up. And then what will you do?
Don't say that.
Okay.
You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. And again, our email is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us questions, comments, lists, whatever you want to share with us. We love hearing from you. So yeah, next week's going to be nutty with Sundance, but we're hoping that you get two podcasts out of the situation. And thanks for listening. Tell your friends about the show. You know, link to us, all that stuff. It's great. It's how people find the show, and we appreciate you doing it. Do more. Thank you.
Maybe it's lost forever.
Stop it.
Goodbye.